What can you remember about the people that you worked with, the names of the people and what kind of jobs they did and what kind of people they were?
I knew George Gator, Dennis Watson, billiard player. Glyn Edwards, I knew of him because his brother was an electrician who started just before me, Raymond. The engineer that I could remember was Bernard Tonkinson when I started, and he went on to better things, and we got one called Peter, I can't remember his second name, but there were another one, Terry, I think it was MacDonald. He was the last engineer up to me leaving, and I think he went on to Saville. The manager when I started was Rick Mitchell, and then it was Tom Pearson.
Did you have much to do with a manager when you were young?
You had to, if you weren't doing your, putting the time in at college and things like that, you know, it were up to see the manager, you know. If you failed your exams, you had to go and see the manager, and he said yes or no whether you went back. Because if you failed your exams as an apprentice, they'd either sack you or offer you alternative employment, but you wouldn't have been a craftsman. But they give you, most of the time, they give you the chance to resit, and you had to pass every year eventually to get your Class 2 certificate, basically, and then carry on, you got your Class 1.
What would you say the discipline was like at the pit?
Going back from when we were apprentices, 15-year-old, we used to get up to some tricks, like, you know. But I don't remember one. There used to be a cable repair shop. One at Lads, Mick Caton, his dad Dick, used to work. I think he used to be the boilermaker's foreman or something like that. Very good cricketer, but his son had got under one of the benches, and we poured this liquid, what they used to fill the safety lamps with, naphthalene, I think it was. We poured it along the bench and put a match to it, and it went up to ceiling, and he was stuck under the bench, you know, dangerous, but that's one thing that sticks out of my mind. And obviously we were dodging the foreman, you know, trying to, when you got a few apprentices together, you know.
Were there initiation rites that you remember?
Yeah, you used to get grease put on parts where you didn't want them put in, you know. It sometimes got suspended off ceiling and things. And
what about the surface of the colliery? What can you remember about the way things were laid out and what kind of buildings there were?
I remember, well, everything was red brick. I remember that. I remember the canteen. As you walk down Fleet Lane, the first place you came to, I think, was the canteen and medical centre, and then into the changing rooms, the baths, which I think that they were the newest part of Water Egg. And then there were some more buildings that were used as a bike shed. I don't know what were they used for originally. And then there were a lamp room. At the side of the lamp room, there was the electrician shop, and then behind the electrician shop and behind the lamp room was the fitter's shop. The manager's office used to be where you came out of the baths into the pit. I think it was to the left. There used to be the where you picked your check up and got your wages from, and then on the upper floor there was the manager's office was right at the end, and he used to have a garage where he used to park his car, I remember that. And the time where he used to clock off was near this garage where the time clock was. That was when you were on surface, you had to use the time clock. The check system we used for underground. And then the two winders, I remember the boilers used to be between the two winders. And that's there used to be permanent stokers in there.
So you kind of like had one boiler for each of the two winding machines for each shaft, or did they all have their own separate boilers for each?
No. It were a series of boilers that I can remember. It were a row of boilers that went between the two shafts. So I think the piping, Paddy, I don't know exactly, but I should imagine the piping were all combined from these boilers to give them the capacity of steam that they wanted.
Right, so there were old steam machines for the winding engines right through your
Yeah. The Water Egg until it closed was steam. Right. Glistening. listening, and they were polishing them all day, you know, brilliant. And then there was the powerhouse where the main surface switchgear was, that were near the, between the winders. And then obviously there were the screens, washery, where they loaded the wagons up to go onto the railway that took you to Eshill Lane, you know, that way on.
What else was there?
The aerial flight, they used to call it. It used to take the waste, the muck, that came off the washery and screens. That's where they used to separate, on the screens, that's where they used to have the pickers, they used to pick the muck off. That used to go into buckets then, and I think it used to go over the canal, and it used to be tipped. I can't remember where it were tipped. I can remember that it were like continuous. The buckets used to come in, they used to be filled, and they used to go round this pulley and then back out again.
So it was a bit like a ski lift.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Oh. It was a continuous loop of empty coming back and full going out, you know. I can't remember how they filled the buckets, but it were non-stop. The other thing I can remember is the surface locos used to take coal to the canal, and we used to have staids, which was on side at canal, and that's where they used to tip the coal into the Tom Puddings. And we used to get called to them regularly in winter, because they were electrical. They were electrical there as well. And there used to be sort of limit switches which controlled certain things.
So how did the coal get from the wagons into the Tom Pudding barges?
Well, that were into I think they were the same type of wagons, the small sort of wooden ones you see on the railways, and the flaps on them, and the flaps opened, and it went into some sort of feeder. And this feeder were electrically operated, because it had like chutes on it and flaps, and they'd be full of coal. And when a Tom Pudding came, the flap opened, operated, opened a flap and filled the Tom Pudding. But these had little limit switches on and things like that. And in the winter, you used to get frozen up, so you used to get called out regular to them. But it would have gone into, like an hopper. It would have been filled into an hopper, and then they opened the hopper to fill the Tom Puddings.
So what about some of the other people that you knew working at Waterhaig during the 1960s?
One of the people I know, I can remember, was Sid Brown, who was a West Indian, I think. He was coloured, a black lad. Unfortunately, he died in the Lofthouse disaster. But I met him when we worked, when I was doing my face training. I did the night shift. He was working on nights. And I also remember they used to kid him on to put a corrugated steel sheet on the floor and do his special song and dance routine, like a clog dance routine on this. And also on the same team, there were an India Sikh working, and he used to bring chapatis on night shift. One of the other rippers, he used to eat onions, like a whole onion, like an apple. So you can imagine what snap time were like, a 20-minute snap time with chapatis and raw onions and some West Indian delicacies as well. So a lad called Vince Freites, Fraites, he were a lighter coloured West Indian. He was an electrician, surface electrician. He came to work. He lived in Leeds. He came. We got quite a few people from further about when the earlier pitch shut, Middleton, Temple News, and, you know.
And did you rub up against the Eastern European miners?
Oh, well? Yeah. There were quite a few of them. A lot of them were used in the, what they call, back ripping and things like that, keeping the roadways open, because when you were doing advanced mining, you were taking the coal out and carrying on forward, and it had to be, the hole had to be filled behind you, sort of thing. In later days, when it was retreat mining, you drove the roadways, opened the face up, and then worked backwards. So all the weight was, you were leaving behind you. But in the advanced phases, when you were driving forward, the weight were where you were wanting to get back out to.
So did you start retreat mining at Waterhaig, or was that a development later?
That were, I can't remember at Waterhaig ever doing retreat mining. I can remember when the first coal cutting machines that got the total coal came on. Our first one were a plough, and basically all it was, there were electric motor at each end of face with a massive chain on that pulled this lump of metal with some pointed picks in, pulled it up, and it just gouged the coal onto the conveyor. And then when it got to one end of face, they reversed it and pulled it back the other way. But that's when the conveyors from the old conveyor belting type were changed to armoured conveyors, although commonly known as Panzers. These were chain link conveyors with flight bars across.
Was that because the chunks of coal were bigger through that process?
And you were continually, like, you didn't have to stop the job to move them. What they did, like, on the Antfill faces, that was the job on the afternoon, because as you had advanced forward, taking your stint of coal out, you took 4 foot of coal out. That meant the conveyor were four foot further away from you. So the afternoon shift, when they undercut the coal, put the machine away, they moved the conveyor then over to the coal, so it was ready for the day shift the next day. The advanced mining means it's you're taking the coal as you move forward, but the actual waste is dropping behind you the way you want to come back out. You know, your escape route is sort of through this collapsed ground where all the weight's coming on.
And so you've got to make sure that the tunnels or the gates are properly constructed to carry the weight of what's above them. How far would a gate go from the main tunnel or roadway? How far would you go on a face?
Till you come to the end of the coal.
So the coal would stop eventually.
If it were a square mile of coal, you know, it's where the seam runs out. You know, this is all done. If you look at the old mining plans, you'd be able to see them. But imagine a square mile of coal. So you'd work in to take that square mile. You'd be going in a mile. You know, that roadway would, them two gates or three gates would be a mile.
And then when you'd finished taking all that mile of coal out, did you then allow, on the gate side of it, did you take away the rings that were holding up the roof? Did they dismantle them, or did they just leave them there?
On advanced mining, they were so distorted, and there's so much weight come on behind you, they were a constant job keeping the gates open. So very, very little was salvaged regarding support work. The conveyor structure and things like that were saved, but the actual support rings, very, very rare.
When you were on the face and you were down one of these tunnels or gates and you were close to the face, could you hear the rock above you coming down?
Oh, yeah, you know, yeah.
What was that like? What kind of noise was that?
It's something you got used to. The most frightening thing is when you're actually on the coal face and the gob, what they call the gob, is constantly dropping behind you. But some occasions it holds up longer than what it should do. And if it comes down all at once, it's a massive noise, and it actually blows all the air off the face, you know, so the actual compression of it and the dust and the noise. But it were very, very controlled. Sometimes if it were a big expanse, it was just slowly lower. You know, if it was shaley stuff, it'd be dropping all the time, you know, as soon as you get out of the way, it's down, you know.
So that would depend on the kind of rock that was above the coal that you'd taken
out. Yeah, the strata,
out.
Yeah.